Monitor. 4 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2000 hours Greenwich Mean Time. This is Monitor, reporting the nation and the world. The combined radio and television networks of the National Broadcasting Company bring you the premier broadcast of Monitor, the new NBC radio service originating from NBC's Electronic Communication Center, Radio Central, New York. Now, to introduce Monitor to America, here is the president of the National Broadcasting Company, Mr. Sylvester L. Weaver.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Monitor, our new NBC weekend radio service. This is a preview, which will be seen on television for the next hour, and it'll be heard on radio until midnight tonight, New York time. But beginning next week, Monitor will start each Saturday morning at 8 o'clock New York time and run until midnight on Sunday. It will bring you a continuous flow of items of high interest and information. Monitor is for all of you, wherever you are, in your cars, at home, at the beach with your portables, everywhere. And on Monitor, we are going to throw away the radio clock. We are going to bring you what we hope is the radio pattern of the future. News and information and entertainment in the vignette form, where the items are as long as they need to be or as short. Well, over a weekend, there'll be a 50 people serving you from Radio Central here. And among them and here today for you to meet are Dave Garraway and Bob and Ray, Morgan Beatty, Walter Kiernan, Clifton Fadiman, Ben Grauer, and many, many others. Now, including in this group, we have our executive producer of Monitor, a man who has been a part of a number of great pioneering ventures in NBC, Jim Fleming. Jim, I've talked about something about the show that we're going to have today. Perhaps you'd better tell us about the people and the places that we're going to be hearing in the next hour.
Well, thank you, Pat. In a moment, we're going to turn our live cameras and microphones to the West Coast, to Hermosa Beach, California, where a Sunday afternoon jazz concert's underway. Then up the coast we go, and we're going to a place where there is no freedom. That would be San Quentin Prison.
San Quentin?
San Quentin.
We going inside?
Inside, well, yes, Monitor goes places.
So long as we don't have to stay. Well, now, what about sports today?
Well, the most unusual sports commentator in the business is standing by at his favorite tavern.
News and opinion.
Well, we'll have the late headlines, comments by columnist Roscoe Drummond from Washington. Istanbul's coming up on the circuit.
Aha. And travel?
A plane is standing by at this moment to go nonstop to London from Idlewild Airport. A Monitor transmitter is aboard.
Good enough. What about entertainment?
Well, Art Van Dam Quintet live from Chicago.
Good.
Jerry Lewis filmed in the Catskills. Live summer theater pickup, Bucks County, Pennsylvania.
What about philosopher and thinkers?
Well, we have yourself, sir.
Well, now, let's steady. Let's talk about what we've really got.
Well, not to mention President Pusey of Harvard and Bill Saltonstall of Phillips Exeter.
Oh, yes. Well, I think you've already gotten into vignettes and what's ahead. Let's talk about what's first.
Well, the top news headlines of this hour, and here is Dave Garraway.
And here are those headlines. From Bonn, West German Chancellor Adenauer is flying to Washington for talks with President Eisenhower. He is due there tomorrow. From Detroit, midnight strike deadline approaching as GM and officials of the United Auto Workers Union seek to settle their dispute. From Sumter, South Carolina, the Ku Klux Klan is out of hiding, holds its first open meeting in 3 years. And from Le Mans in France, the greatest auto tragedy in history, 85 dead in the crash of the sports car race at Le Mans, about 100 miles southwest of Paris. And
Dave,
those are the headlines.
When this crash occurred, Monitor was there with BBC's reporter, Mr. Baxter, Raymond Baxter, and this is his broadcast a moment after that crash happened that killed so many at Le Mans. Here it is.
Disaster struck hard here at a point some 150 yards to the right of our stand, roughly halfway along the pit. And this is what happened, I think, because although I saw it while I was waiting to broadcast to London, I find it hard to remember exactly what happened. The Healy spun like a top, but Lance Märklin, I am happy to say, escaped with a very severe shaking. The Mercedes, however, struck the wall on the outside of the road, and as it burst into flames, the engine plowed through the crowd, which at that point was 12 or 14 deep, I'm told killing 30 people and injuring 50. The disaster has cast a cloud over the race of 1955, which many, many hours of exciting racing will, I do not think, dispel. This is Raymond Baxter in Le Mans.
That was Raymond Baxter of the BBC at Le Mans, a moment after the tragedy occurred this weekend. That was almost, I suppose, 20 hours ago. It's now just past 4 o'clock in New York City. Hello, Paris. Hello, Frank. Bergholzer.
Hello, Jim Fleming.
What's the latest toll in this tragedy at Le Mans?
The latest toll, not completely accurate, but the best we can get from the reports gathered from various hospitals around Le Mans, shows 84 persons dead, around 100 wounded, and of those 100, at least 5 so seriously wounded they may not survive.
And yet the race continued to the very end, is that true?
The race continued to the end without further serious mishap. There were a few other smaller accidents, and the Mercedes stable of cars, the Mercedes company, withdrew their cars because it was one of theirs that caused the serious accident.
Well, thank you, Frank Bergholzer. We'll be checking in again on Monitor.
And that's it, Pat. Wherever the story is, Monitor's going to try to go there. That's a somber one indeed, but the most important story this weekend. There are livelier stories ahead. Bonn, Germany, Buenos Aires, West Coast. We're on at the scene in Detroit where the negotiations are going underway. Monitor microphones are outside the conference room. That's how it's going.
Well, Monitor certainly seems to be moving. You know, we call this area here the Communication Center. We built it especially for our new service. Radio Central is our name for it. And it's located on the fifth floor of the RCA building, 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York. And all the visitors who come to NBC can get a good look at Radio Central. Matter of fact, I think somebody must
All right, if you folks
now.
Will fact, just Bob step this way, we have something we think you'll be very interested in seeing. It's called Radio Central.
What is it?
Radio Central, sir.
What do you mean, it's like New York Central?
No, I think you're thinking of a radio.
Oh, I see.
This is the communications headquarters here.
Did you say this is, these are all communicators in there now?
That's right. A monitor is a communicator.
I see. And this is a radio program?
A radio program, that's right. All of this.
Well, why are you televising a radio program?
Well, nobody's ever asked me that question, sir. I'll try to find the answer for you right after
But this
the tour.
Is Radio Central.
Radio Central, right.
Would you like a cashew?
I would. Oh, no, I'm not allowed to while we're on duty. Thanks just the same.
And now, we're going places again. Now that you know what Bob and Ray do on their weekends, Monitor travels now across 3,000 miles of the continent for two contrasts in American life this Sunday afternoon. First to Hermosa Beach, California, and then to San Quentin. Life at Hermosa Beach at this hour is a pretty gay affair, I can tell you. And so for the first of many Monitor musical remotes, here is the Pacific Ocean with Howard Rumsey and his Lighthouse All-Stars.
House in Hermosa Beach, California, welcomes Monitor. I'm Howard Rumsey, play bass with the All-Stars you've been hearing, and we have a jazz concert like this every Sunday afternoon. In fact, every Sunday afternoon for the past 7 years. We're 100 yards from the Pacific here in this busy little beach town just outside the Los Angeles city limits, 10 minutes from the big L.A. International Airport. Maybe you know some of the men in the band. Frank Rossellino, trombone. Bob Cooper, oboe and tenor. Bud Shank, flute and alto sax. Stan Levy, drums. and Claude Williamson at the piano. We all record for various labels individually, and then together we record on the Lighthouse series for Contemporary. You can see the cover of our latest LP. Bud and Cooper changing from the woodwinds to the saxophones. The number you heard first was Happy Town. The next, Jazz Invention.
Paintings in the Lighthouse by Rodney Evans Bacon. The Seal and the Pelican, courtesy of the Hermosa Beach Ocean Aquarium. Monitor moves on now from Hermosa Beach and the music of the Lighthouse All-Stars to a contrasting Sunday afternoon scene here on the coast. From the largest of California state prisons, here is the Monitor's San Quentin report. And here is Walter McGraw.
I'm standing on a guard walk at San Quentin. Behind me is the gas chamber. To my right, the North Block. We'll be going in there in a moment. Below me, in the big yard, are some 4,000 men. They represent around 13,000 years served and to be served. We'll talk to some of those men later. We'll also talk to the men who are responsible for handling these men. The first of these, Richard McGee. What exactly is your position, sir?
I'm director of the State Department of Corrections.
Which means?
Which means that I'm head of the State Department, which is responsible for the management of our 8 state prisons.
Isn't there quite a bit of difference in many ways between the California prison system and those of other states?
Yes, I think it'd be fair to say that.
How?
Well, for one thing, we have an indeterminate sentence law in California. The courts send people to the jurisdiction of the Director of Corrections instead of to a particular institution.
Well, that puts quite a bit more responsibility on the prison, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, because we feel that we have a responsibility to rehabilitate these men while we have them with us.
You use the word rehabilitation. What's the difference between rehabilitation and punishment?
Well, in my view, punishment is a negative approach to the problem. Rehabilitation is a positive approach. We feel that we have a responsibility for carrying on programs in these institutions which will attempt to readjust these men and return them to society better than when we got them.
All right, to find out a little more about that, we're going into the North Block here. There, Peg McGraw will be talking to Warden Harley Teets.
Tell me, Warden Teets, how many men are there currently locking in North Block?
There are 757 men quartered in this cell block.
757? How many men should there be?
We have 414 one-man cells in this building.
Isn't that about twice as many men as you should have?
That's right.
Pretty tricky, isn't it?
It is, and we believe it contributes to about 75% of our disciplinary problems.
Ye God, 75%. I would like very much for the audience to see one of these cells, because isn't it sort of against the law for that many men to be doubled up like this?
It is not against the law, but it is against our standards, which provide for 400 cubic feet of space per man. We have here 376 for two men.
If you can look in there, you'll see the two bunks right together. How do the men get out of bed? Can they get out of bed at the same time?
One man must remain on the bunk while the other man's engaged.
Well, this overcrowding and double locking contributed to riots throughout the country. How come nothing happened here?
In spite of the negative things of overcrowding and some idleness, we have many activities around here. For example, 2,000 men enrolled in the various educational activities. We believe if you keep a man busy, you don't have too much trouble with him.
Well, they've sure been busy. The week that we've spent here, there have been men all over the place. Industries, education. We'll hear more about the men in a few seconds when we return to Walter McGraw, who is now on the wall.
From time to time today, Monitor will be returning to San Quentin. When it does, we'll be talking to many of the men you see down below us there. We'll also go way over beyond that shed there into the mess hall. We'll be talking to the men then as they eat. Also, a radio first. We're going to eavesdrop on an inmate council meeting. The inmate council is a daring experiment in the prison world. We're going to have microphones in there, but the men won't know when they're going to be hot. There will be no officials in there. I won't even be in there. We will just listen to what happens naturally and ordinarily every week in the inmate council meeting. As I say, this is a radio first. We'll also be talking to men who have just come into San Quentin. We'll be talking to men who are about to go out. In just about 1 hour, we'll be talking to a man who has been condemned to the gas chamber in California. Until then, Monitor continues from radio control in New York.
And we're back in New York City now. We'll be going back to San Quentin, as Walter McGraw told you, every hour between now and midnight Eastern Daylight Time. Now to sports. Monitor on the baseball world this afternoon. We're going to get the human story for some exceedingly rabid fans interviewed under adversity. And then Morgan Beatty will check the Monitor scoreboard for us and bring us up to date on the scores at this moment. First, though, it's Al Kelly, whom we all know around here as Professor Double Talk, and who speaks a convincing kind of English in his own unique way. And the result is something to hear. I think we'll be confounding a few of the fans who are at this moment having a casual beer in a tavern down on Manhattan's 6th Avenue. See, to the fellows at the bar this Sunday afternoon, Al Kelly is just an inquiring reporter, as far as they know, from NBC. And not, as we know him, the old Double Talk expert. You and I are in the gag, but the boys at the bar in Hurley and Daly's are not. So we'll take you now to the friendly neighborhood tavern. Go ahead, Al Kelly. How are the Giants doing? What do the folks think of the Yanks there?
Hello, folks. My name is Al Kelly. I am Monitor sports commentator. Recently, there's been much ado about baseball, what with the commissioner appointing a committee of three to find out exactly what, if anything, is wrong with baseball. We feel that we would like to get a cross-section not only of the way of thought where the entire nation founded of the national pastime for three, but also to give you the report as we find firsthand without a trace. And so I would like to ask the proprietor, Connie. Connie Haley, you're the proprietor of this fine establishment.
Yes, I am.
I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about baseball. In your opinion, has the national pastime brought about a new trend which today the entire country is based on the fact that all this has given the story, or do you feel that there must be a new way of bringing out attendance which is bad?
What did you say?
I said, do you think that baseball today in attendance is equaling the amount of the mark that they have had for the past number of years because of the new stadium and the changes of places, but also a trade for Sad.
Repeat that, please.
I'd like to know one thing. Tell me, Connie, whose fan are you?
Giants.
You're a Giant fan.
That's right.
Well, let me ask you this. We know that the Giants today are now in third place, quite a bit behind. Regardless of the fact that Mays, Antonelli, even Magdalene, the way they're going along with Newspaper, would you give it a thought if we had to say that the entire team has a chance?
The Giants are definitely going to win.
Well, I'm glad you answered that. Pretty good. Here's a young man here I'd like to ask you. I imagine you look like a ball fan, are you?
Yes, sir, definitely.
Well, can I ask you your favorite team?
Yes, sir, the Dodgers.
The Dodgers are your team?
Yes, sir.
Well, we have another cross-section. And let me ask you this. In your opinion, are the Dodgers today just as much of a chance? Because when they're only 13 games ahead, many people there feel that they're not play. Some would like to see them 20 ahead before they feel they can win a draw.
Yes, sir.
Now, do you think there's a trade in the entire situation of baseball with
Trump? Yes, sir. I think baseball is the cleanest sport there is.
And well, I'm inclined to agree with you there. What would you say about the Little League where most of them have given a shot?
Well, may I ask you a question, Mr. Kelly, since
yes.
you're a sports
yes.
authority?
By all means.
What do you think of the effect on baseball will have when Ted Williams returns to the Red Sox?
I'm glad you asked that. Ted Williams with the Red Sox today is so strong that there's no place we should give that final say. Young man, do you think that baseball today has the same chance that we've always given for time?
Oh, absolutely. Without qualification, I would say so.
Well, what would be, in your opinion, a ball game which today is brought about where everyone is watching it, not only with television, say, but also see, would there be any new cause for Saturday?
Well, the only time you have a ball game is when the Giants play.
Oh, there's I no think you're wrong. Oh, no, no. You must agree that there's a trade. But thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to sum it up in this manner. We feel that all of baseball today is definitely established for a try. If you go out to see the game, watch the players. Look at the way the ball is being thrown around. Take every available sight, and no matter what you feel, at home, in your play, on the road, or listening or taking trade, you will know that there is trade which all of us, regardless, when you will find the trade, and I hope I made myself clear.
And so, as the suds sink slowly into the clients, we leave Hurley's Bar and Grill on 6th Avenue and Monitor's sports analyst Al Kelly. Somewhat more practical on a Sunday afternoon are the facts, just the facts. What is now? What is now?
Yes, a full Major League Baseball today, except for the American League game. Here's how the result so far. Game American League, first game. Final, New York Yankees 2, Cleveland Indians 10. First game, Washington Senators nothing, Chicago White Sox 1. They're playing at the bottom of the 7th. First game, Baltimore Orioles, Kansas City Athletics.
Baltimore Orioles, Kansas City Athletics. Baltimore 1, Kansas City 1, playing the top of the 4th. The single game here, Detroit Tigers, postponed because of rain. Chicago Cubs in the National League now. Chicago Cubs 9, Brooklyn Dodgers 5. Top of the 9th inning. First game, Chicago, St. Louis Cardinals 3, New York Giants 8. They're playing in the top of the 8th. Cincinnati Reds 8, Philadelphia Phillies 12, and that's a final and the first of two games. Final score, Milwaukee Braves 3, Pittsburgh Pirates 5. End of the ball score.
Right, thank you, Morgan. And now issues in the news. This weekend, how will Monitor handle those as we're on for 40 hours? All over the country. An editorial reaction all over the country. Getting our copy by direct wire through Western Union Press Copy, Monitor will view the nation's press and all the journals of opinion, summarize, synthesize, and we'll have our own editorial page with top NBC analysts, top columnists. Here, for example, in the Sunday New York Herald Tribune, of Roscoe Drummond, his column, Congress Must Prepare, Too, for the Meeting at the Summit. Roscoe Drummond, standing by in Washington. What do you mean, Congress must prepare, Mr. Drummond?
I mean, we hear a great deal that the President and the Secretary of State must do a great deal about this Big Four meeting. I'm convinced that what happens to the foreign aid bill that is now in the House of Representatives can perhaps do more than any one single thing to determine whether the United States goes to the Big Four Congress with a strengthened or a weakened free world.
How do you mean that exactly?
Well, as you know, the foreign aid bill has been passed by the Senate, is now before the House. There are several efforts being made in the House at the present time to put tremendous restrictions upon this foreign aid bill. One is the proposal to deny aid to any country which pursues either a neutralist or a semi-neutralist foreign policy, such as Yugoslavia or India. The other restriction would be to prevent the United States from giving industrial help, from helping the less developed nations of Asia and Africa from industrializing their economy. If we put such restrictions on American foreign aid, it seems to me that we will be doing the part of the communists.
Roscoe Drummond, you say Congress must prepare. Let me ask you, is Congress going to prepare?
I'm inclined to think that there will be sharp efforts made to impose these two restrictions on the foreign aid bill. My own judgment would be that these restrictions will ultimately lose by a bipartisan coalition of Democrats and Republicans.
Thank you very much, Mr. Drummond. And Monitor aims to cover opinion. We aim on Monitor to bring a representative cross-section of the nation's press and opinion from all centers coast to coast. Tonight, for example, on NBC Radio, we'll be in the city room of the Chicago Sun-Times. And Monitor has a sense of region. It's one of our main assignments in producing North to South by radio, East to West, Bob to Ray.
Well, friends, that's Monitor. We've got to hurry along now.
Tommy,
Yes, sir?
You're pretty old looking to be a guide, aren't you? Were you a little slow, fella?
Well, sir, I'd like to be an announcer someday.
One of them communicators would be a pretty good job. Who's tall, distinguished looking fellow there in the blue suit?
That's Mr. Weaver.
Oh, is he a communicator?
In a way, yes. He's president of the National Broadcasting Company.
Signed your paychecks?
That's right.
Play up to him, fella. Take my advice.
All right, well, now we've got to move along here, so let's...
Hey, Dave Galloway!
Wait a minute, they're on the air there, sir.
Just wanted to offer him a cashew, eh? Dave, I see we're going to have quite an audience out in front of Radio Central for the NBC tours and visitors.
Mm-hmm. Just like our 49th Street window on the Today Show, except, of course, folks can't wave to the camera on Monitor. It's radio.
No, but they can talk into the microphone, and we'll be interviewing the visitors throughout the weekend as they come by Radio Central here at NBC. So far, well, let's see where we've been. Out there and at Hermosa Beach, San Quentin Prison, cover the news and baseball. Well, now, a Monitor offbeat vignette. We call them snapshots on this program, this service. Our Department of Roving Eccentrics has been busy recording a kind of mad world of sound audio from the fringe of fantasy, if not lunacy. An example.
Now, another Monitor snapshot. We bring you the sound of oysters recorded in their beds off Oyster Bay, New York, in Long Island Sound. This is the sound oysters make in a month without an R. Greatly amplified, the sound of oysters out of season.
Thank you. That kind of madness will continue throughout Monitor now and then the next few hours. You may hear the sound of a worm turning, lettuce wilting, a termite banquet, to name just a few. However, we hope that most of our correspondents are closer to reality. Let's check up right now. John Cameron Swayze should be on this circuit from Istanbul, Turkey, ready with a two-way from the Istanbul control room. Hello, Istanbul. Hello, John Cameron Swayze. Hello, Istanbul. Come in, John Cameron Swayze. I believe those are oysters on the Bosphorus. Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, after a station break, Monitor moves on to Idlewild Airport, really, to the departure of TWA Flight 860 for London, boarding passengers now to Harvard University, Chicago, music by Art Van Damme, and someone you haven't met yet, Miss Monitor. Mobile unit standing by at Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Dress rehearsal underway at the famous Playhouse. This is Monitor, going places, doing things this Sunday, June 12th, 1955, reporting the nation and the world.
This is Monitor, the new NBC radio service.
This is Monitor, the UNBC radio service.
And this is Clifton Fetterman to introduce the second part of this inaugural simulcast. My stint on Monitor is on Sunday afternoons. And I'll break now and tell you that this new role of communicator is one I find appealing.
Well, the range of broadcast material covered by Monitor is a bit staggering, from Harvard to Martin and Lewis to Bucks County Playhouse and back, not to mention the music from Chicago by Art Van Dam. Well, that's a table of contents to give any editor, communicator, a pause. Oh, Pat, ladies and gentlemen, Pat Weaver, NBC's president, who's keeping an eye on all communicators today.
Kip, we're really delighted that we're going to have you here with us in Radio Central.
Well, it's my pleasure, Pat. And you know, I'm beginning to discover what a vignette is in electronic terms. I find out, to my surprise, that it's almost anything.
That's right.
For example, at this moment, at New York International Airport, Idlewild it's called, Transworld Airline Flight 860 to London is about to take off. Our mobile television unit is at the scene. Our mobile radio transmitter is aboard the plane. It's as simple as that. We hope it works. Come in, monitor reporter W.W. Chaplin. Stand by Flight 860 for London.
Yeah, this is Idlewild, all right, but there's nothing idle about it. This is the biggest and busiest international airport in the world. Planes going out all over the world every minute, coming in from all over the world. This baby behind me, Flight 860 of TWA, the Star of Massachusetts, is just on its way now, just about to leave for Shannon, London, and Frankfurt. And here's the captain of the flight, Captain Grade. What is your flight plan, sir?
Our flight plan to Shannon, Ireland today is 10 hours and 33 minutes. We'll be flying at 17,000 feet across the Atlantic.
The weather boys haven't given you anything to worry about, Captain.
Oh, the flight should be very routine and a very nice flight.
Thanks. I know you have lots of things to do. You're just leaving. Thanks a lot, Captain, and happy landings. We're going to give monitors going along on this flight, and of course they do have radio on the plane. They talk plane to ship, plane to shore, but it's not broadcast quality, and so Monitor has put its own equipment on. And here is Joe Sterniolo, one of Monitor's field engineers. He's going along and has equipment. What does it take to give a voice to a plane like this so it can talk back to Monitor's listeners? About 2 tons?
Oh, no, not at all. About 100 pounds of equipment.
About 100 pounds. Just a baby passenger going along, but that means that, as Mr. Fadiman says, we hope it'll work. So, Joe, you get in and make it work, will you? And now I want to talk for a minute to our hostess on this plane. Have you been doing this a lot? How many times have you crossed the ocean?
Oh, I would say approximately 50 times.
50 times across the ocean. What do you think about transatlantic passengers? Are they nice people, or do they get nervous, or they say, do this, do that?
Oh, no, they're wonderful people. They couldn't be nicer.
You never had any trouble with them?
No, I don't believe so.
Don't look
never.
Forward to any on this trip?
Don't expect any, no.
Well, Miss Favreau, I know you have lots of things to do, so goodbye and good flying.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, here is our most distinguished passenger. He's a man from Ceylon, and he's a cabinet minister. Names from Ceylon are a little hard, perhaps, for us to pronounce, so I'm going to ask him to tell us who he is himself. Who are you, sir?
I'm the Minister for Transport and Work, Ceylon.
Minister of Transport in Ceylon. And your name, sir?
Jaya Wickrama.
Yes, sir. And what were you doing in America?
Well, I'm returning from an air conference held in Montreal.
Montreal. You go straight back to Ceylon?
London, fortnight, and back Ceylon, end of the month.
Well, I think we've saved a good seat for you. You were kind to wait until everybody else was seated. But I think everything's ready, so if you'll get aboard, sir, I think the plane's about ready to go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
indeed.
Your Excellency.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. And that's the way it goes. His Excellency, the Ambassador for Transport from Ceylon, is now getting aboard the plane. And the plane then will be ready to go. They'll pull away the ramp. They'll close the door. And the Star of Massachusetts will be on its way to London, and off they go.
Thank you.
Hope our transmitter works a little better when we get up in the air. This is Clifton Fadiman again, your communicator on monitor, the new NBC radio service. Flight 860 will be airborne momentarily. We check it again on NBC radio 1 hour from now, beyond the continental limits of the United States. At this very moment, on this Sunday, June 12th, the president of Harvard University is concluding his baccalaureate sermon. It's commencement week, and I believe we can show you now how Monitor has the happy temerity to mix serious ideas with innocent and not-so-innocent merriment. We go now to Harvard University, whose president, Nathan Marsh Pusey, has been greatly concerned with spiritual values in America today. And for this inaugural Monitor broadcast, Mr. Pusey has consented to give an appraisal of the spiritual temperature of these times. Mr. Pusey is interviewed now at the Faculty Club at Harvard by another noted educator, Mr. William Saltonstall of Phillips Exeter Academy. The first voice you hear is Mr. Saltonstall.
Mr. Pusey, since we are heads of two large American educational institutions, we find ourselves very much involved with the problem of religion in education. I wonder what your evaluation of the spiritual temperature in this country in mid-1955 is.
Well, I think it's better than it's been in recent years. I would say that the extreme feverishness that seems to have characterized our society, say, in the period between 1950 and 1954, has spent itself quite a little. In a way, there has been a great deal of anxiety and worry, fear and insecurity, characteristic of our people since the period of the Second World War. One might almost go back to the time of the Depression. And yet, I would recognize, as you would, that when you're speaking about anything as vast as this country and as varied as the American people, it's rather difficult to generalize about them. One has to answer a question like that. I think it's fair to say that we seem to have a little more calm, a little more confidence than we have for some time. And one would hope that these outward signs are reflections of a greater inner health.
Would you say that this is partly the result of slightly calmer times where the state of religion is less related perhaps to a national or international emergency of some sort?
Well, that's undoubtedly true. But one could say that one cannot live in a state of anxiety forever. I think that the fears and needs that cause interest in religion are probably always there in some degree. I think that this may explain the fact that there's been quite a little evidence for increased interest in religion now for more than a decade.
Do you foresee an increase in religious spirit among the American people, or do you anticipate a decline?
There are many more people going to church now than we have had for some time. The number of churches being built is increasing by leaps and bounds. One can argue that not all of the signs of interest in religion are reassuring ones, and yet I think it's fair to conclude that out of all of this interest, there's very much that's good, and there's very much that will be enduring. The interest in religion has to have a deep popular base. The problem then is to try also to introduce as much mind into this as one can. I think it's a healthy sign that more people are interested, and from this will come a greater readiness on the part of young people to go into the ministry, a greater readiness on the part of lay people to participate in the affairs of their churches.
President Nathan Marsh Pusey of Harvard, interviewed by Mr. William Saltonstall in this exclusive Monitor film. Pat, I understand that having introduced these noted educators, in the next hour I'll find myself busy giving out the ball scores. Is that right?
That's right, Kip. That's Monitor.
It's okay with me. And here's one of my fellow communicators, that well-met newsman, Walter Kinnon.
Well, thank you very much, Kip. Pat, my assignment today is summertime, summer theaters. To be precise, Bucks County Playhouse, one of the more famous ones, located in New Hope, Pennsylvania, where right now live Monitor mics and cameras are about to cover the drama. Someone, I don't think it was Mark Twain, but someone once said, a summer theater is a place where actors who have been unemployed in the winter don't get paid in the summer. I believe I've set a small vignette, Pat.
Yes, I think you have.
You think it's possible?
Congratulations.
I think it's miraculous for me. Well, anyway, that pay angle, that's not strictly true these days, because summer theaters are now big business with big plays and big stars. And among the most important is Bucks County Playhouse. So with a large push of a small button, we leave Radio Central and we go to Bucks County Playhouse and producer Michael Ellis.
Good afternoon. We are in New Hope, Pennsylvania, 65 miles from New York City, 35 miles from Philadelphia. It's a bright, sunny day, and everybody in New Hope is happy about it. It's a town of about 2,000 people into which hundreds of thousands of people pour every year to see the plays at the famous Bucks County Playhouse, to shop in the shops along the quaint streets in New Hope, and to see the historical sites, because, as you know, George Washington slept here. This is his country. Many of the houses in New Hope are 200 years old. The Playhouse and New Hope itself is situated right on the banks of the Delaware River. New Jersey is simply a stone's throw away. Today it's a lovely day and the sailboats are out on the river and, of course, the motorboats are buzzing back and forth. The town is very gala and very gay today because, as I say, it's a beautiful day after 3 or 4 days of cold and rain. At the Bucks County Playhouse, activity has been going on for a month now. We opened here on May 13th with Donald Cook and Kim Hunter and Biff McGuire and the King of Hearts. This was followed by Sam Jaffe in Reclining Figure. And last night we closed a 2-week production of Picnic, which was the first presentation of this Pulitzer Prize play in stock in the United States. Now, inside the Playhouse, we're rehearsing a new play, which is to have its world premiere tomorrow night. The name of the play is The Fairly Fortune. Miss Jessie Royce Landis arrived this afternoon to begin rehearsing next week's play, Oliver, Oliver. There's always activity in a summer theater, you know, and of course the Bucks County Playhouse is no exception. Inside the theater, Victor Jory and Michael Wager are rehearsing a scene from The Fairly Fortune by Theodore St. John. The play is owned by Alfred Deliagra Jr., who produced The Mad Woman of Shiloh, The Voice of the Turtle, and many other Broadway hits. It takes place in New England just before the outbreak of the Civil War, in the home of a wealthy manufacturer of rifles. The scene, which was designed by W. Broderick Hackett, is in the second act, and the actors are Mr. Victor Jory and Mr. Michael Wager. Mr. Jory is playing the part of a fanatical anti-slavery man, someone rather like John Brown. In an earlier scene, he persuaded Mr. Wager, whose name is Bent Fairley in the play, to commit a robbery in order to get money to buy rifles for the abolitionists. During the robbery, Bent accidentally killed the man he was robbing. Now another man has been accused of the crime. The situation is that if Bent confesses to the murder, he will not be able to use the money to buy rifles. If he does not confess, the cause of anti-slavery will be helped, but Brent will send an innocent man to his death. Mr. Jory, as Isaac Miller, is trying to persuade Bent not to confess.
Bent, for heaven's sake, don't do anything foolish.
What do you mean, Isaac?
You were about to confess, weren't you?
Of course I was, and I will.
Bent, you want to do what's right, I know that. But in trying to do what's right, you may do a terrible wrong instead. A terrible wrong, Bent.
I don't know what you're talking about, Isaac. What more terrible wrong could I do than let an innocent man hang for something that... Could I do anything worse than that?
Maybe you could, Bent. Maybe you could do something 1,000 times worse. If it was only yourself you had to think of, or me, why, sure, you'd make a clean breast of it. Why not? You'd have no other choice. But it isn't us, or him, or any one man. You've been given a chance to strike a deadly blow against slavery. The blackest evil this world has ever seen. And you've no right to skip a chance like that. You've got to figure what's one man's life compared to that. Yours, mine, anyone's. Anyone's.
Would you let an innocent man hang for something that you've done yourself?
Innocent. He's black with guilt, boy. You were all for strangling him just now.
He's innocent of murder. I'm guilty of one crime. God, keep me from a crime like that.
Ben. Sit down and let's talk. We've got to try to see this thing clear in its proper size. You haven't committed any crime, don't you know that? Crimes are committed in our hearts. Was there any crime in yours? No. Did you intend to do what you did last night? No, Bent, you didn't will it. But it was willed just the same, not by you, but by a higher will than yours. A power you served without meaning to. A power for good. Can't you see that, Bent? You seemed to see it last night. Do you think God has changed his mind since then? God doesn't change his mind. And can't you see his hand in all this now? Can't you, Bent? Do you think it was just by chance that Emmett Bowden was here in this house last night, wickedly, sinfully here, in the very act of sin, so that now it looks as if the guilt were his, and you're left free to go forward with God's work? In God's eyes, Emmett is only one man like any other, one among millions. And it is written, it is better that one man shall die, so that the people may live. Those are the words of the book, son. They're good and true and holy words. God's words.
The devil can quote scripture, Isaac. What are you anyway? I don't know what you are, a saint or a devil.
I'm neither one, Bent. Neither one nor the other, I suppose. But I am a fighter in God's holy cause. And so are you.
How can we serve God's cause this way? Won't we desecrate it? What was it that Debbie said the other day? If you do wrong in God's cause, it stops being God's cause.
Bent, what childish talk is that? Anything done in God's cause is sanctified. Anything. And you've been given the power to raise that cause to triumph. And you've no right to fail it. That would be a crime 1,000 times blacker than any you could possibly commit. It would be wrong, wrong, eternally, damnably wrong.
I'll have to do what I think is right, Isaac. Not what you tell me.
I can't tell you, but God can. And if you pray to him, maybe he will. Let's pray to him together, Bent. Let's go down on our knees now and pray to him together.
I am praying, Isaac, in my heart.
Are you ashamed to go down on your knees to him? Why should you be? You once meant to devote your life to God's work. You wanted to be a preacher, so why should you be ashamed now? Let's kneel to him together. Dear God, Father of us all, have mercy upon thy servant, Bent. Let thy light shine upon him, that he may know what to do to serve thee.
Our Father in heaven, let me not do evil. Speak to me in my heart, dear God, that I may know what thou wouldst have me do.
Oh, God, hear his prayer. Be thou his guide in darkness, that he may know thy will. I'll do it!
Well, that was all very interesting, but our tour backstage here at NBC is already 35 minutes late, so I think we'll have to be hurrying along.
Oh, what's the hurry? Have another cashew here.
Oh, I'm not allowed to eat anything, sir.
Now, I understand that Radio Center will be all glassed in.
Well, that's right. That's all going to be glassed in.
I know you've been busy all week getting ready for the program, but there's no glass here.
Well, we know that, but once it gets on radio, see, that's to allow for the cameras to come in here. Once it gets on radio, there'll be glass here, and it'll all be highly pressurized inside.
What's that mean?
Well, the inside will be pressurized, and it would be catastrophic to lean against the glass like you were doing there a minute
ago. Oh, I see. Well, right. The communicators might get the bends.
That's right.
I see. I bet Dave Garraway would like to have a cashew in there.
Some music now. Live music from Chicago. The man who civilized the accordion is with us today, Art Van Damme, and his wonderful little quintet. Whether you're driving or loafing or thinking, Miss Monitor will come in here and add her dulcet temperature and weather comments to the wonderful music of Art Van Damme and help by Jerome Kern. Thank you.
In Aberdeen, Scotland, the temperature is 51 degrees and it's cloudy. London, 64, cloudy. Paris, 52, rain. Berlin, 61, cloudy. Copenhagen, 55, partly cloudy. Stockholm, 61, cloudy. Rome, 75, partly cloudy. Tokyo, 70, cloudy. Warsaw, 55, showers. Madrid, 77, cloudy. Casablanca, 73, partly cloudy.
Monitor's music by the Art Van Damme Group in Chicago. The temperatures around the nation by our own Miss Monitor. Monitor's going places. Right now, Brown's Hotel in the Catskill Mountains is the scene of the world premiere of You're Never Too Young, starring Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. We're all set to take you there, so we push another button. We've got plenty of them, and here is Jerry Lewis in person.
Thank you very much, Clifton Fadiman, and I want to wish you a lot of luck on your wonderful new show, Monitor. And you, too. I've been watching you, Mr. Pat Weaver. You do a wonderful job as a master of ceremonies, and I know that Monitor will enhance the value of radio 100% from this point on. I can only wish you luck. And as you know, I am up here at Charles and Lillian Brown's beautiful hotel in the Catskill Mountains, where we are previewing our brand new picture, You're Never Too Young, which is a Paramount VistaVision production. And we have a scene for you, ladies and gentlemen, that we hope you'll enjoy. You see, I play the part of a 14-year-old in this film, and I'm a little deceptive throughout the picture. And you will see that Dean is now about to introduce me to the board of directors of the girls' school, and things will happen. We hope you like it.
Sorry I'm late, Mrs. Brennan, but I had a train to meet.
We're just taking a vote on the dismissal of Nancy Collins.
Good, I'll vote no.
What?
Don't you think Nancy should be allowed to testify on her own behalf?
I hardly think she'd have the nerve to appear, let alone testify. Have you heard what happened?
I was there. I saw it.
You mean you saw the man?
Did I? Well, he was very suave, sophisticated, a man of the world. You know, Nancy never had a chance.
Well, that explains everything.
Wait, I'll let you see for yourself. Mr. Wilbur Hulick.
Hello. I can do a trick. Excuse me, Auntie, I'm gonna do it. Help me with a trick. Oh, Wilbur, stop. Hold it, wait a trick. I want it done. One trick. Hold my hand. All right. And then, oh, I landed right on my feet. Very suave. Had a good trick. Oh, swords. Wilbur. Come on, let's have a fight like you see in the movie. Oh, God. Well, back up. Watch out. Oh, no. Oh, no, spare me. Yes. Oh, please spare my life.
Be good
oh,
boy.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
You, 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 asleep, so I invited him to stay in my drawing room.
Well, I think that was highly commendable.
I apologize if I have violated any rules.
Well, under these circumstances...
Meeting's adjourned.
That's right. I'm sorry, Nancy.
Well, I better be going.
Now, it would be a shame to lose such an adorable little boy so soon.
Why don't you stay for the Saturday night party?
I'm sure you'd enjoy meeting all the little girls.
No, I think I'd better be running along.
Good.
Thank you, Aunt Nancy. Goodbye, everybody.
Well, you folks on this NBC tour got to watch Monitor covering the movies there with Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. And if you've about finished your cashew nuts there, sir, we'll move along.
Hey, Dave Galloway.
Don't do that. You're not allowed to. And don't rap on the imaginary glass like you were doing a minute ago.
Hey, look, it's Dave Galloway over there. Hey, Dave, come on over. I have a cashew here.
You can't interrupt
Dave.
Him.
I've heard him and watched him for a good many years. I like to... Hey, Dave, come on, have a cashew.
I wish you wouldn't. I'm trying to keep this...
Here, boy. What's that sign
say? See that? Please do not feed or annoy the communicators. Now, walk this way.
Well, Pat, to the contrary, quite the contrary, we hope people will annoy, if not feed, our communicators, because Monitor collects ideas and we're going to relish a lusty gripe.
Yes, indeed we are. Another vignette, whatever we can get in. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've seen an hour preview of Monitor, and in the next 7 hours, we have a great many things for you. A reporter standing by outside the conference room in Detroit to bring you the developments on the big story there. We have a pickup down in South Carolina of the church. We have baseball fans in Milwaukee to tell you why they like the Braves. Dave Garraway is going to talk to Marilyn Monroe. We'll have pickups from the TWA Constellation, another pickup from San Quentin. Henry Morgan will fill us in on some of the previews of the television shows on the air this weekend. Carl Sandburg is going to be honored in Boston and will be there. And we have a pickup from the Palladium in Hollywood with Les Brown and his band of renown. So we've got a lot coming up. Goodbye and good luck from here.
Thank you,
Jim.
Thank you.
Fellas.
Okay, here we go.
Monitor Mambo has been recorded by Perez Prado and his orchestra for RCA Victor. This premier simulcast of the new NBC radio service was produced and directed by Michael Zima, managing editor Burroughs Prince. This is Monitor, the new NBC radio service.